Well, good afternoon. It's been kind of an interesting day. We've heard a lot of assertions and talk today, and you're going to hear some more. This is going to be my exercise in creative laziness here, where I got to make stuff up. That's our other term, by the way. That, what was it? UFO. That's the unsubstantiated. I thought we should have a MUFO, which is made up field observation. So, because that's what we're going to do today. But it's an interesting topic, and one that I've thought about is particularly as drought tolerance came on the scene. And I got thinking, I'm not in a state that's plagued by drought. And what do you suppose farmers would pay for that trait? Most of our farmers in Illinois, if you said, hey, you want to, come out from the dark alley and say, hey, you want to buy a trait? They'd say, well, what's it do? And then they'd say, I don't know. I don't think I have that problem. I don't think I want to buy it. And so that's sort of where we're starting from. And the history of traits, and let me just get into this a little bit. Most large commercial corn genetics and breeding companies, as I say here, have had announced the development and in some cases the release of hybrids with drought-tolerant GM traits. These haven't actually come charging onto the market, you've probably noticed. We've been hearing talk about these for, 5 years? Probably something like that, maybe a little bit more. And in most cases, they suggest the release will be targeted to lower rainfall areas. And you just saw, Paul, your stage one and stage two. The pipelines and the stages, they get all confusing to me. The genetic nature of the trait's not very clear, and I'm not going to try to make many guesses about it. The public information that we see, kind of the videos of the corn plants staying unrolled when it's dry and happy, indicates the traits will help control stomatal aperture, and I suspect a lot of other things too. And I also suspect that some of these traits are discovered in Arabidopsis, and we actually don't really know what they'll do once they get in corn plants, but that's just sort of a guess that I'm seeing. And just to be fair here, I went to websites and took down several things from the major companies that are working on this, and most of you have seen this kind of thing. So you see up here, it's kind of a description, if you can read it, of things that Paul just showed. But it sort of lays it out here. It does say drought tolerance 1, 2011, or as early as 2010, which apparently didn't happen. Drought tolerance 2, 5 to 7 years. Some of these transgenic and some of them not. And then down at the bottom, there's the heart-rending picture there of the poor suffering corn plants. It doesn't actually say those on the left are irrigated to the same extent as those on the right, but I guess you're left to make a guess on that. And then the one down here, this one, we saw that one yesterday talking about one of the things that these do when you have dry weather, that they can put kernels on when non-traited ones have just given up the ghost. Well, Monsanto has done this as well, and I'm not going to read this to you, but they just list drought tolerance. And drought tolerance and nitrogen use efficiency are the two things we're going to talk about today because they're the two that companies are talking about. And they're also, if you step back and looked at the world of now insect protected and herbicide tolerant hybrids, the question comes in, what's next? Well, let's solve the major problems that farmers think they have, and that is when it's dry, they don't get as good a yields and they pay too much for nitrogen. And sometimes they're deficient. So let's address those, and I think it makes a lot of sense. So they've done that as well. And they had, I'll have to point out here that it says up at the top that, this year the company is launching its first 8-way stack trait, Genuity Smart Stacks Corn. And I'll have another word to say about that in a little bit because, we'll get to that. And Syngenta, I didn't want to leave them out. They announced there in July of this year, these AgriSure Artesian technology, a really cool name, springs of living water coming out and stuff. But, that's so everybody is talking about the same thing at about the same time. And my suspicion, without any specific knowledge, is that maybe it wasn't very many people that actually discovered these traits and then peddled them off to corn breeding companies. The context here is in this business about what traits have done for us lately. And this is the curve that many of you have seen drawn, and I drew it myself here. I did it metric, so it's scientific for sure. And you see here, this is U.S. yields, and I put the obligatory break in there about 1995, which was when the first BT hybrid showed up. I'll just make an assertion here that, you know, in my understanding, the corn borer BT trait was a happy accident in terms of it probably by itself or whatever came with that trait, the performance of hybrids seemed to be improved by that trait. If there are any corn company people here that want to argue with me on that, I'm not going to answer back. But we think, you know, we saw that trait spread widely, a phenomenon that was, you know, southern Illinois. Well, you've never seen a corn borer. Why do you have corn borer BT? Well, they're the best hybrids. And plus, you know, they stand really well. But you don't have any corn borer. Well, you know, they're the best hybrids and they stand really well. And I paid more for them, so they've got to be better. And so I think the mystique grew up a little bit that traits are magic. You know, you put the trait in, you get the protection you want, and you also get this other related boost. And I think, you know, that wasn't too hard to understand, and farmers responded. I occasionally point out that, you know, farmers can only buy the seed that the companies are selling. And so the decision on how much BT hybrid was going to get sold in a given year was largely the company's decision, because they decided what to plant. They didn't ask the farmers what seed to plant last year or down in South America. You know, they said, here's where we think the market will take us. And the market took them to very rapid adoption of hybrids with traits. I kind of smile when people say, well, what are farmers choosing to do? Guess what? They're choosing to buy the seed that's available. And a lot of it's trait hybrids. And the hybrids were improving at the same time. And it wasn't hard to make that association. More traits, better hybrids. Cause and effect, not quite clear. This is in Illinois, the same thing, and we even buzzed up higher than the national average. We didn't put 2010 on here because I wanted the line to fit really well. But here's one that I produced. This is the percent over the last 10 years of acres in Illinois in genetically modified corn of one kind or another. And you can see it went up pretty much as you'd expect. And over there's the yield. It's magic. More traits, more yield, right? Sure. So let's talk specifically a little bit about drought. And I'm not going to do a physiology thing here today, because, you know, pretty much we make this up as well. But all of us who have been in the business for a long time would probably agree with a few of these statements, and that is all droughts are not created equal. I think, Paul, you said drought tolerance is a really complex thing, and it is. That's important because to me it suggests that there may be no such thing as general, absolute, always on, or there when you need it, drought tolerance in a transgenic hybrid. Or one just with the traits. Broad spectrum traits, I guess, old-fashioned traits, whatever you want to call them. I mean, back in 1988 and 89, those of you who are around, companies came out and said, hey, we had some hybrids that did better in those conditions. Why don't you buy these? You know, Pioneer had a station in South Dakota at that time. Imagine that. And so you had drought-tolerant hybrids, and people knew about them. So this is not something really new. And in a way, you know, I appreciate that at least some companies are saying, hey, there is some drought tolerance already. So these are influenced, the effect of a drought or low rainfall is affected by lots of things, and I've just named a few here. One of our best farmers that I know in Illinois, and I think it was 2007, he produced 200 plus bushel corn on 8 inches of rainfall from planting to harvest. Now that talks about our soil a little bit, but it also says, you know, there's some things here that you wouldn't necessarily predict from the way we think the world works. The state of the crop, the speed with which plant soil and plant water potential decrease, you know, quick onset versus slow onset, how and when the water stress gets relieved. Excuse me. And this is just my generalized, you know, this is about the rainfall we get. This is about what the crop needs. On an average basis, we get about an inch of water per week during the growing season, and that's what the crop needs, so our soil has to provide some. And all of you have seen this. This, the top corn figure there that says, you know, right there at pollination time is when things really fall apart. Understand, this was done with a special technique whereby they could impose drought really quickly and relieve it really quickly. Never happens in the field, ever. So we'll assume that maintaining the photosynthetic rate is the main goal here with drought tolerance, okay? These are just my assumptions. And then I ask a couple questions. Is keeping the stomata open and the plant presumably photosynthetic active at low water potential in the absence of drought relief simply hasten the onset of the permanent wilting point? At some point, everything reaches the permanent wilting point. Secondly, would a trait that helps maintain photosynthesis during low water potential automatically or even usually increase the water use efficiency? That's a different question and one you need to keep in mind. Because at some point, and I think we heard that this morning, producing X amount of yield takes Y amount of water. And 2X amount of yield sort of takes 2Y amount of water. Unless you really change the water use efficiency, and I don't think we're changing it very fast, if at all. Lastly, do we want corn leaves rolled or open during drought? Makes us feel good. One farmer was testing one of the early generation ones a few years ago, and I made a statement something like, I'm not sure you want the leaves out there rolled out when there's not enough water, you know, to get them through the day. And he said, yeah, he said in their trial, he said it didn't get relieved, and he said they got no yield off of these that kept their leaves open and unrolled during the day. Just runs you out of water faster, right? I took that in a field in northern Illinois back in 2005. It's one of the, we had a localized severe dryness during that year, and it'll show up. And I don't know what a trait hybrid with a drought trait would have looked like at this point, but this one looked pretty bad. Other things that have come along to help, we have early silking now. I just took this picture in to show that. And that's a drought avoidance. At least it gets us through that critical period a little better in some cases. And I just put this one in as an example, a reminder to us that even though today's hybrids really are better in terms of high population tolerance, which is related to drought tolerance, sometimes things don't work very well. We can still get low yields, actually. We have to work at it in Illinois, but we can manage it occasionally. Nitrogen use efficient hybrids, I'm not going to say very much about those this afternoon, except some obvious things. The idea is to increase the grain yield produced per unit of applied fertilizer N or per unit of assimilated N, which are different things. Announcements of commercial release of high NUE hybrids have been rather muted, kind of on and off, but HU NUE traits are under development for sure. And a question there, does higher NUE mean higher yields with the same amount of N or the same yields with less N or both? Questions. My objectives today are pretty simple. We wanted to assess the likely value of and return on investment to drought-tolerant genetically modified corn hybrids in different parts of the U.S. Corn Belt. Wouldn't have to be genetically modified, but that's kind of what we're talking about today. And then I'll say a little bit about the likely value of high nitrogen use efficiency hybrids. The approach we took was this. We took the yields, I downloaded from the NAS database the yields from 1990 through 2009 for different states. Linear year trend lines were calculated over the period. It's a nice period to do that because we really didn't have very much bad weather. So, you know, trend lines look pretty good. And then under the simplifying assumption, and I will admit that it's that, I took all the below trend line yields for the period, and I moved them up to the trend line. Okay? Do you understand what I'm saying? I just said, with the drought trait, they wouldn't have been below the trend line. They'd have been on it. Okay, it's simplistic, but it was something I could do. And I didn't know what else to do, actually. But so we below trend line yields were adjusted up to the trend line, and then I calculated a new trend line. And the value of the drought trait that we calculated then was just the difference between those two trend lines. I had to show those of you who aren't initiated where the corn grows. And I did it for most of the corn belt that you see there, state by state. That was the yield in 2009. That's in bushels, of course. And so, you know, 2009 was a very good year in terms of yield. Here's the Illinois corn yields during that period of time, 1990 to 2009. Nice, steady upward trend. There's the trend line put on it. And in this case, I changed the bonds below trend line into the yellow triangles you see there. And by magic, then, we just made those up on the trend line, and then we calculated a new one, as you see here. And the difference between those two trend lines, and I've got the data there that you can see, is what the value, I'm calling the value of the trait. Now, fact of the matter is, you know, drought has not been a very common phenomenon. And it's actually, if you consider that all of this was due to drought, and it clearly was not. Not all below trend line yields are due to drought. That we know for sure. But you can see here what happened when we did that. Most of these states, when I graph this for the U.S. or for individual states, the lines tended to start a little farther apart and come closer together at the end of the period. So it makes it a little complicated because you have to say, well, what was the value at the beginning? What was the average value? What's the value last year if you had had this? I was also able to take down, because Nebraska is joining the Big Ten, and I just have a special place in my heart for Nebraska. But the nice thing about Nebraska yields is they calculate the irrigated, they'll report the irrigated and the non-irrigated yields. I thought, why not look at those and see how much difference those are? And all I did was up at the top is the irrigated yields. I'm still not quite sure why they wander around, but you know, I guess they don't have the right people there. The bottom ones are the unirrigated, and you can see there's a lot of spread in those data. When you adjusted them up, it made the yellow line sort of turned into the green line, and that doesn't show that decreasing trend. You know, that line's fairly far apart, as you can see. So let's just cut to the data here. I did this by the Eastern Corn Belt and the Western Corn Belt just to have a way to break them up. I put the average yield there on the right next to the name of the state for that 20-year period. I put the value of the trait, how far apart those trend lines were in 1990, then in 2009, and then the average. So this is the average value over that 20-year period. of that trait in megagrams of yield per hectare. For those of you who struggle with that, 0.06 is about a bushel. Okay, you're writing this down. And so this would be 5 bushel, give or take here, for that's about 7, like that. The U.S. is about 0.19. More recently, at the end of the period, you can see that they're considerably less than they were on average in most cases. The other thing I listed here was what the value was in the worst year during the period. So if you say to the farmer, when did you really need that trait, he might answer that. And you can kind of get a, you know, these are pretty large numbers here. 3 and up megagrams, 50 bushel in that range. Here's the Western Corn Belt. I've got going from Iowa, and then here's Nebraska irrigated and Nebraska not irrigated. They're different as we expected. They're not actually as different as I thought they would be when I calculated them. I wanted to point out that this high value in Iowa, those of you who know Iowa, during the last 20 years, what was your worst corn yield compared to trend line? What year? How much of the yield loss in 93 was due to drought? 93 was that year when, you know, Iowa was divided into the deep end and the shallow end. And that was purely due to excessive water. There was no drought anywhere in sight. So I know this is an oversimplification, but, you know, you can't go through picking and choosing those. You just have to say this is the way it was. So one of the things I was interested in is whether or not, you know, yield level is the determinant of the value of the drought trait. So we've got, you know, South Dakota and places like that in here, and Nebraska not irrigated. And this is the average corn yield over the 20-year period, and that's the average advantage to the drought trait. And that correlation's not very good, as you can see. We would expect it to be in that downward slope because the drier, the lower the yields, the more value the drought trait would have. I did this just as an exercise. I went into Illinois and did it by crop reporting district. And we see a better correlation there. We have to be careful about it. But I've got data for Iowa and other states by crop reporting district as well. But it seems when you get to maybe a smaller region that you're looking at, that these correlations might get a little bit better. And you can see there the range of yields that we've had over that 20-year average. And this looks better, but this is at the end of the 20-year period. This is for 2009. So this was the yield by state, and that's the advantage to the trait. So you kind of get an idea there. I'll just sum this up then. Using a corn price of $200 per megagram, which is just about what it is today, it's around $5 a bushel, and a seeding rate of 80,000 per hectare, which is 32,000 per acre. The occurrence of drought has decreased, as I said, over the past 2 decades, and this has decreased the apparent value of this genetic trait against drought. On average, about 0.07 megagrams, or about $14 per hectare, would be the value of that trait, averaged over the last 20 years. And among states, that ranges from fairly low value in Iowa to about 10 times that amount, $120 per acre, in non-irrigated corn in Nebraska. The maximum value of the trait in a given year in the U.S. over this period was $1.18, $236. And among individual states, it ranged from $262 to $640 per acre if we had had the protection in place. If we expect to return to conditions and variability that we've had the last 20 years, in other words, if this no drought period comes to an end and we get back to more variability, we would expect that trait value to rise. Now, we're not going to know very quickly when we return to conditions that don't have drought. In fact, our yield problems this last year were not due to drought either. They were due to excess water. And maybe the trait will work against excessive water, I don't know. Yield level is not a great predictor of the value of the trait of drought tolerance, but the correlation may have strengthened slightly over the last 20 years, and the negative correlation between yield and value of the trait may be higher among parts of a state than among states. Probably more consistency among years. So, currently the apparent value of the drought trait in the entire U.S., especially in more productive states, is less than the typical trait charge or fee that has accompanied the release of most GM traits. Remember I said it's about $14 per hectare. That's not very much. It's about a bushel of corn, if you want to think of it in those terms. It's essential that this trait be released in top hybrids if producers are to be willing to buy it. Paying extra for something that gives you a bushel on average, it better blame well be a good hybrid, or I don't want it, because you lose that so quickly. 1 or 2 years of drought in major growing areas could change the attitude on this, especially if the drought trait hybrids have proven themselves by then to be really top-notch hybrids. Nitrogen, my time is up. Nitrogen responses are highly variable. As I show you some on-farm data there from 1 year in central Illinois. This is one small study we did with about 10 hybrids that we varied rates. This is a 3-year average. And I simply pointed out that the two most profitable hybrids were not necessarily the ones with the most nitrogen use efficiency. I think pretty much what others today have pointed out. And just in numbers, you know, the NUE, the delta yield divided by the optimum nitrogen rate, sort of a return to added nitrogen at the optimum rate, and the return to nitrogen above zero nitrogen, the figures on the right would be sort of how much profit do you get from these corn hybrids at their right nitrogen rate. Those did not, in all cases, line up very well. Nitrogen use is going to be very complicated. I think we all understand that. Assigning it value to it is very difficult. And I'm not quite sure what the marketers will do when it's hard to assign a value to this. But producers who apply too much nitrogen now, which is a whole bunch of them, you know, they could cut their nitrogen rate back today and they'd be better off with the hybrids that they're going to plant next year. The value of a hybrid lies less in its response to N than in its overall productivity. And I think I'd stand behind that one. And the risks associated with N loss, which we had a lot of this last year, are not easily controlled. And reducing N rates might increase such risks. I personally cannot see a farmer taking a hybrid today and saying, "You mean I can actually put 30 pounds less nitrogen? Oh, yay, that's what I've been waiting for." You know, that doesn't make business sense, a risk management sense to a farm. From a farmer's standpoint, GM traits developed so far have been valuable in doing what they're supposed to do. And they've mostly been worth the added cost. A few little question marks being raised today about that, but for the most part, up to recently, I'll put it that way. New agronomic traits will be welcome only if they do what they're supposed to do and provide a return. And we need top hybrids, and we care about traits only if they contribute to that. As I always say when I give this in the extension setting, farmers are buying hybrids, companies are selling traits. Are they the same thing? And I suspect what's going to happen is that companies are going to be shifting a little bit, as Paul talked about, towards selling the hybrids and not so much selling the traits. Thank you.